This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks. So this is what happened to a young, aspiring writer back in 1977. He was trying to publish his first article in The Atlantic right here in Boston. He submitted multiple drafts, and each time they were sent back for more work until finally the editor-in-chief returned the manuscript with these words scrawled across it. Let's face it, this fellow can't write. Tough words. Well, that fellow was Tracy Kidder, who went on to become a Pulitzer Prize-winning and best-selling author of such books as Strength and What Remains, My Detachment, and House, among many others. Now Kidder has co-authored a new book about the art of writing with his longtime literary partner and friend Richard Todd, who was Kidder's first editor back in those early days at The Atlantic. The book is called Good Prose, The Art of Nonfiction, Stories and Advice from a Lifetime of Writing and Editing. Tracy Kidder lives in Massachusetts, and tonight he and Richard Todd will be talking about the book and their shared literary wisdom at the Boston Public Library at 6 p.m. And they both join us right now here at Radio Boston. And welcome to you both, gentlemen. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks. Yeah, nice to be here.
Great to have you. First of all, this is a book, first and foremost, about a great relationship between you two that began at the Atlantic all those years ago. And Tracy Kidder, when you first met Richard Todd, did you have any idea that you were that you would be beginning a literary relationship that lasted, what, 40 years and still going?
Well, no, really, I didn't. Although I was just desperate to get my foot in the door and try and, you know, begin. I hoped to learn how to write for a living. But a man named Dan Wakefield, who had a distinguished journalist and turned novelist, whom I'd met in Iowa, helped me do that. And as he told me to go to the Atlantic, and he said, there's a smart young editor there named this guy named Todd. So you should try to work with him.
That's what happened. So I want to talk to you about this, Richard Todd, because there's just terrific description in this book. The article that Tracy was trying to publish was about a mass murder in California. And Tracy Kidder, you wanted to begin it with the following line. In the spring of 1971, someone went mad for blood in the Sacramento Valley. And Richard Todd, Tracy asked you, what's wrong with this article? And you answered, well, first of all, the first sentence. So say more about that. Well, what's wrong with that first sentence?
That moment lives in legend. It's true. I can't say that I remember it, although it all came back to me when Tracy recalled it. It did seem a little over the top, that that language. I said so.
Now, did you know, same question that I asked Tracy, did you know that you were beginning a relationship with a great American writer that was going to last decade, that would last decades and decades and decades?
No idea. What I knew was that I was dealing with one very persistent young writer, and he wouldn't go away, and after a while I didn't want him to go away.
Except sometimes.
when
he drank too much.
I want to read just a passage that comes early in your introduction, which I just loved, and it's about this relationship as it formed early on. We called each other by our surnames, as our sergeants had in Army basic training. To Kidder, a childhood for Todd seemed improbable. He must have been born old and probably born ironic to boot. To Todd and practically everyone else, Kidder was young beyond his years. He was plainly ambitious, but his self-esteem ranged from abject to grandiose. And this is the part I love. Once at a Christmas party that went too long, he confronted Bob Manning, who was the editor-in-chief of The Atlantic, right?
Yeah, for a long time, yeah.
So he confronted Bob Manning and announced, I'm the best damn journalist in the Western Hemisphere. Hung over and contrite the next morning, he was comforted by Todd. That's you, Richard Todd, who said, at least you didn't claim the whole world.
moment I do remember. In my living room.
What I like about that passage, it raises the question of the importance of the writer-editor relationship. How important is that, and how did you two click so well so early? Let me start with you, Tracy.
Well, I dare say most other writers, no other writers that I know have this kind of relationship. Perhaps no other writers I know needed so much help from an editor. But it was tremendously important to me, and partly to learn how to write for, first of all, for a magazine, and then later how to write a book. I had written some such things myself, but they'd been pretty undistinguished. And also just for the kind of, insecurity, I think is a occupational hazard among writers, but I seem to have that in large amounts, and it was good to have to have this feeling that there was someone there to help me, me up.
And Richard Todd, so I'd love to hear from you about those early days. I mean, how would you sort of characterize that relationship between editor and writer? You, the editor, Tracy Kidder, the writer.
Well, we have a lot of sport on the subject of Tracy's eagerness. On the other hand, it's a great gift to an editor when a writer is willing to sort of bring you in on his own thinking early in the game, let you know what he wants to do, and then is willing to do it and redo it and rewrite. So that becomes very pleasing for an editor, a responsive writer.
There's a nice line in this book. It says, "For Kidder to be allowed to write ad infinitum, to be allowed to rewrite ad infinitum was a privilege preferable in every way to rejection slips."
Yeah.
And for Todd, it was possible to imagine that a writer willing to rewrite might turn out to be useful, which is seems like a nice description. Is finding a good editor, Tracy Kidder, is it finding a good editor the result of luck, hard work, or what?
In my case, it was luck. Hmm. I mean, I'd had other editors before, some good, some not so great. The first really terrific editor I had was Robert Fitzgerald, the poet and great translator, who was my teacher in college. But in this case, it really was luck. And then persistence.
Yeah.
You know, I just needed I needed that kind of help. You know, the other thing I think I was going to say about this, what we have done a lot of for 40 years together is rewrite. And it's not the kind of rewriting that one usually, that one's students usually think. It's a different definition than one's students usually carry with them into, say, a writing class. Mm. It's just that, you know, often it means taking what you've written and throwing it away and starting over again.
Mm.
We did a lot of that.
Yeah. In your long relationship as writer and editor, what was the most common disagreement that you had? I mean, was there a theme to, have I touched a chord here?
Great lines.
Great
lines.
Really good stuff was the bit more general term. Great characters he'd make me cut.
We used to go sailing together, and Tracy had a list. He threatened a list of lines that I had urged him to cut. I wouldn't say that I ever cut anything. I suggested that he cut things. And he, getting me trapped on a boat, he threatened to read them all to me.
We used to, over 40 years, we've developed all sorts of rituals.
Yeah.
And there was that. I think finally I only got as far as remembering one of those great characters he made me cut, and realized, he was probably right.
Yeah,
there were. I remember one line from a book that I refused to cut that he thought I should cut.
Tell me what that is.
And I regret it now. Mm. I think I was looking for some clever way to talk about how big the hands of this carpenter were. I think I compared them to his right hand to an ottoman.
His right hand was as big as an ottoman.
Well, yeah, right. When he rested his chin on it, was not a good line. But I get stayed. I've had others like that.
And you won that fight. Yeah,
I won that fight, but I lost the battle.
All.
You know, it was Pyrrhic victory.
So, Richard Todd, what was your argument in your futile argument in convinced trying to get him to cut that line?
Mercifully, I forget that whole incident.
we have this.
Although you make me want to go back to it now.
We have this old this old ritual that I might as well tell you about, in which we write all the bad reviews for a book as we're reading the page proofs to each other, the sort of last act, this thing. And I do remember a time when. The idea is that, you know, if you really write them, really write them in your head, then they've, in a sense, they've already appeared, and they don't have to actually appear in print. But occasionally we've been wrong about that. But I was going to tell you what Todd's review of this book is.
Yeah,
it's a one-liner. It's How to Write Like an Old Wasp.
I see. Well, I have one more question about the editor-writer relationship, and that is, is it still a reality for most writers? I mean, you hear lots of stories about big publishing houses that simply don't have the staff to, mm-hmm. to seriously edit manuscripts anymore.
Well, you hear a lot of horror stories about publishing, and and I know some of them are true. It's a very mixed bag, though. There are many good editors out there. The worst thing I hear, and the sort of saddest thing I hear, is from editors who say that they have to do their reading and their editing at nights and on weekends, and that the rest of the day is taken up with meetings. And that strikes me as a sort of dysfunctional situation. Yeah. I'm in an odd situation. I edit, but I edit under contract. I'm not in a publishing house all day.
Yeah.
But I'm not now.
You know, there are famous cases, of course, Maxwell Perkins and so on, and, you know, but those are the ones we hear about. But I wonder if, I'm not sure editors have ever been rewarded above all for editing, mm-hmm. you know, more for business, it seems to me.
More for, oh, for business.
For business, yeah, I'm sorry. Right. But I don't know, you know, I'm not sure it's really changed enormously, although people do complain more often about, I think, a lot of what you hear are complaints that have to do with copy editing, typos and so on.
Sure. Yeah, I want to talk a little bit about this specific book and about the process that you went through, Good Prose, The Art of Nonfiction. First of all, why this? Why did you want to do this together? Whose idea was this?
It was his idea.
Richard Todd, what was the big idea anyway?
My agent called me up and said, why don't you write a book about Tracy, working with Tracy? And I didn't think that was a great idea, frankly. And I mentioned it to Tracy, and he thought it was an even worse idea than I did. But but then it occurred to us, perhaps it occurred to me just moments before it occurred to Tracy.
Oh, yeah.
That we might be able to write something together. And he warmed at the idea.
Yeah.
Eventually.
Eventually.
It actually took me a little longer than he thinks.
So you didn't go for it right away, Tracy.
Well, it seemed difficult, and I was afraid of writing about writing. You know, yeah. I'm sort of superstitious about it. But, it did turn out to be quite a lot of fun, and I'm proud of this book. And I also got some revenge here and there when I got to edit him. I mean, his main problem as a writer is he's slow.
I'm wondering, well, maybe that's sort of partly the answer to the next question I'm asking, but what did you learn about it? I mean, you guys knew each other so well, 40 years working together, but suddenly it's not the editor-writer relationship, it's co-writing.
Right.
What did you learn about each other in that process?
I don't think we learned too much new, although something new did happen. We had never quarreled in 40 years. I mean, not openly. I'm sure we said things to our wives and friends and relatives, but I did finally yell at him over the phone. The one time I've ever done that, near the end of this whole thing, so
dare
I guess
I ask what it was about.
No, I can't remember.
It was a last minute change that I wanted to make,
and that I didn't want to make.
So the editor,
in fairness, Tracy was racked with pain at the time, but
the editor writer relationship, it seemed like it was continuing as it always did.
It really didn't feel that different. I mean, except that I was doing some editing of his.
It felt a lot different to me.
Well, you had to write.
I had to work, yes. But not only that, I had to sit still for editing. And I must say that Tracy's much, much better at that than I am.
Well, I'm sorry.
Oh, no, I was sort of going to move on because our time is running low, and I feel like I haven't really given you a chance to talk too much about what's actually in this book.
Yeah, I was going to.
I mean, it really focuses on three types of writing, right? Narrative journalism, memoir, and essay.
Right.
In essence, we're talking about storytelling here. And you say, if I understand correctly, that the literary culture around storytelling like this has really changed over the years, and we're really embracing nonfiction writing in a way that we haven't before. Why is that?
Well, there was a book out not long ago with a wonderful title, Reality Hunger. And I think there is something to that title anyway. Mm. I mean, I think people do have an appetite for what's going on out there. Good thing.
Real stories.
And I think that the form has been recognized. I teach in a writing program that's devoted at Goucher College, is devoted entirely to nonfiction, which is a good thing. And MFA programs generally have now are beginning to make a place for nonfiction. So the form is getting a little more legitimacy, I think, academically.
Right. Tracy Kidder, do you agree with that?
I don't know that it... It's hard for me to see the trends. I'm sort of lost in just doing my own work, so I don't... But if you wouldn't mind, I could just describe this book briefly. I
mean, yes,
one of the things that what we really do here is there's the problem was that this book had to be written in had two authors, so we didn't want to say we very often, and we ended up with a kind of assembled voice to pass on advice, but mindful and illustrated, you know, our advice with the work of other nonfiction writers, but we also felt pretty strong that everything that we were trying not to be didactic, and pretty much everything we think we know about writing, we learned together doing it. And so we individually, we also have these parts of the book that are written in the first person, are different first persons telling stories about, you know, our work together, which I think are the best parts of the book.
I agree. It's a delightful read, and I've been really enjoying it and look forward to reading on to the end. The book is called Good Prose, The Art of Nonfiction Stories and Advice from a Lifetime of Writing and Editing by Tracy Kidder and Richard Todd. Thank you both for coming in.
Oh, thank you.
We appreciate it.
That's
thank
great.
You very much.
Tracy Kidder and Richard Todd, the two will be talking about the book and their shared literary wisdom at the Boston Public Library tonight at 6. There's a lot more information about all that at radioboston.org. Stay with us. Coming up, the String Rock Quartet Darling Side is live in our studio. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.